Many traditions, many stories, hidden knowledge buried in them all. Brother Mercurio and Michelle Thompson uncover the mysteries and the hidden jewels in all the traditions. Good afternoon, everyone. Today, I am back with Brother Mercurio, and today we're going to be talking again about Buddhism, the path to enlightenment. Today, we're going to be talking about the concept of the three poisons and how thinking can lead to illness. Now, this is one of my absolute favorite subjects. I mean, I'm so glad that we're doing this today because I have actually done some experiments with this myself personally. The whole mind over matter thing is mind-blowing. Now, I know this part that I'm about to tell you isn't Buddhism, but I think it kind of falls into the category of understanding how the mind is so related to how we feel. I remember when I was younger, I used to get sick very easily. Every time I got a cold, it would end up draining into my lungs and I'd get pneumonia. And this would happen every single time I got a cold. So I was always petrified of getting sick. I was living on my own and my parents were in another state because my dad got a job in North Dakota. And here I was by myself with no insurance. And so one day I got a cold. And right. I remembered reading something in some book I had picked up about mind over matter. I remember just beginning that cold and thinking, oh my God, here it goes. That night I laid in bed and I sat there telling myself, it's just a cold. I'm going to feel better in the morning. I'm going to wake up feeling good. It's going to go away. And I just kept on telling myself that until I fell asleep. And the next morning I woke up and it didn't go into pneumonia and it went away. I use this technique of just talking myself through something and it went away.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I know. So, and I'm sure that this isn't exactly about Buddhism, but I just wanted to kind of share that with you because I actually do believe that when we sit in a thought for too long, that it affects our body in a major way. What I'd like you to do is just kind of go over the three poisons and kind of explain that to the audience. What are those three poisons?
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Nice to be back again here with Michelle. Yeah, today we're going to talk a bit about the Buddhist or Tibetan Buddhist approach to healing and medicine and so on. So yes, correct. It starts with the three poisons, which is a concept they use. It's quite a universal concept with Buddhist doctors. What are the three poisons? So they are ignorance, hatred, and greed. And these three things are considered to cause karma. You know, they set a whole chain reaction of cause and effect that eventually can manifest into an illness. So they've kind of brought it down to those three things as the root, you know, the origin of all things. So this may have happened, of course, as you know, but, you know, Tibetan Buddhism, they believe in past and future lives, reincarnation. This may have been set in action in a previous life. So if you've got an intractable illness, you know, some very serious thing, perhaps like cancer or something like that, it may have had its root in a thought or an action you did, you know, I don't know, 200 lives ago.
Really? So, that far so back?
It could be. I mean, it could be anything. And it just, for some reason, it comes out in this life. And particularly that seems to apply to illnesses that are very difficult to cure, you know. And then on a micro level, you know, as you said, if you have a cold or something like that, it may have come from a thought. It may, you know, one of the healing modalities, not necessarily Buddhism, but there's a, in Ruach healing or Kabbalistic healing, sometimes there's an idea that, you know, if people hold in resentment, it can manifest as a cold. You know, there are things like that. If you there are certain things that you didn't release or process, as you say, it can come out in the body.
I can tell you this, that if I'm worn down, if I'm overworked, if I'm stressed, I get sick. And if I get really, really, really stressed out, I start having stomach problems. And you can kind of relate it to the chakras as well. People that have issues with stress, they get ulcers. You know, people that worry too much have stomach problems, digestive problems. You'll find that a lot of people that have issues with finances or stress over finances tend to have problems with their bladder. People who've had a lot of heartache and pain. They have heart issues. There's actually a book by Louise Hayes that talks about all this. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard of her. I don't know that book. Yeah.
She went over every different illness and came up with affirmations that you can say to heal your body with based on that. People who have back problems, it's because they feel like they're not supported.
Right. And that makes sense, doesn't it? You know, you can't bear something. Can't carry it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I want to hear more about the Buddhist philosophy. Now, I'm not really liking the whole idea that you're going to have an illness that's based on a past life, you know, because it's like, I'm dealing with enough from this lifetime. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Of course. I guess there are tools to deal with it. Of course, you know, that's what they also say, which is the good news is that there are ways to handle it. So what they say, the ultimate cause of disease is basically grasping onto things, which is caused by these three poisons. So if you're holding onto, you know, attachment, this whole concept of attachment, and you're holding onto your thoughts, or you're holding onto particular resentments or particular, I don't know, other things that have annoyed you in your life, or you've not been able to process. And I think, as you say, there's a very interesting concept around things being in the mind versus manifestation in the body. And you can basically resolve it in your mind first if you catch it early enough, I guess. So the Buddhist approach takes this to a whole nother level and talks about past lives and future lives and all this kind of thing. And, you know, you've got these three mental poisons. There's also the other background information is that there's a medicine Buddha. There's a particular Buddha in the Tibetan Buddhist path called the medicine Buddha, who's bright blue. He looks bright blue.
Really?
And he's holding a medicine jar and he's holding a healing plant in the other hand. And the Tibetan doctors go through 7 years of training. A bit like the, you know, Western doctors, they have to study plant medicine. They have to identify all the different plants that can heal. And the Himalayas is full of those. You know, that's where they're centered, isn't it? So around that area, they have some amazing plants that you may not get elsewhere in the world. And they go through this long training, which also gets them to focus on their own inner issues. So they have to solve their own karma. And they also have to meditate on the medicine Buddha on a regular basis and chant the mantra that goes with it. So a bit like you were saying that Louise Hay has affirmations, the Buddhists tend to use mantras, you know, to help deal with diseased thoughts that might manifest and things like that.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
You know how there's like what we call a current that gets established? Mm-hmm. Where people put a lot of energy into something and so it manifests into a bigger power.
Yeah.
Is this something like that because of these mantras that they're using? They have been used so much that they're stronger versus somebody saying it, for instance, in English. Like I was thinking about something that teacher that you have, I was talking to him because I'm going to interview him, right?
Yeah, that's great.
And He was telling me about this one particular mantra that you say. Let me see if I can even remember it. It's Nomo Guru Bay, Nomo Buddha Ya, Nomo Dharma Ya, and Noma Sangha Ya. Anyway, so he says this over and over again. And so I looked up the translation for it. And I take refuge. Guru, yeah. I take refuge, Buddha, take refuge, Dhamma, and then Sangha. I'm just wondering, like, if you were to say it in English, would it have the same amount of power? Because those words have been used that's create like this powerful current that's been used so many times.
Yeah, I mean, that mantra is to connect you with the current, really, of Buddhism, you know, the kind of the Buddhist teachings, essentially. You could say it in English. I think people do, actually, in the West quite often.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah. But of course, as with many things also in the Western path, right, we use things like Latin or we use Hebrew because that feels more sacred. It feels more like something that takes us to another level.
I was listening to a Hebrew rabbi, and he said that because the language is the original that it was created in, there he was talking about that current and that power that comes from that. One of the things he would say is, I can say this in Hebrew and it's going to affect you on a subconscious level better than it will if I say it in English.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
It sort of makes sense because when If it's in a language you understand and you speak all the time, like English, then of course you have associations with that. You've already built up, you know, understandings of those words. Whereas if it's in a language you don't understand, it's almost like the sound and the vibration of it hits you more than the words, because you don't know what the words are. So it's like, I think it's to do with that. It sort of takes you in deep, a bit like, you know, hypnosis and stuff. You kind of, you're going behind the mundane.
I noticed that when I was doing it, because I was like, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get out my little mala beads and I'm going to say this every day, you know? And I noticed that there was this emotional like thing that kind of hit me. And that was before I actually even knew what it meant. And I was like, I don't even know what I'm saying. You know? Yeah. And, but I also pulled up something on YouTube, and they had this music and they were singing it. There's something to be said about the vibration of something versus saying it.
Absolutely. You know? Well, and even in the West, we say, you know, in the Golden Dawn, we say by names and images, all things created and recreated. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, that's what's happening here. You've got your image of the particular Buddha that you're connecting with, and then you're making a chant related to that Buddha. So for the medicine Buddha, you know, you visualize this blue guy sitting on a lotus and having various saints and arhats all around him. And then you chant the Buddhist, you know, the medicine Buddha chant, which, shall I chant it?
Yes, chant it. I want to hear it. Do you know it by heart?
Yeah. I'd say it every day.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Because okay, I work in healthcare, you know, I picked it up and my teacher gave it to me because I work in healthcare. So it kind of actually helps. I've noticed it does help me with my patients. Mm-hmm. Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze radze samudgate soha. So you would repeat that.
Teyata om. Say it one more time. Sorry. I was talking on top of it. So say it one more time.
Okay. Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze radze samudgate soha.
I feel more healed.
Oh, do you? Well, that's good. It worked, obviously.
I'm imagining the blue Buddha, you know, the lotus, you know. Yeah, that's amazing. You're going to have to type that in so I can put it in the description for those who want to heal their body.
People can Google medicine Buddha chant, and there's some great ones out there on YouTube, you know, people saying it. One of my favorites is the Buddhist monks that have a very deep voice that chant, the Gyuto monks they're called.
Yeah.
And they do this very really I can't hear it. So deep.
Yeah,
it's like
that's what it sounds like, you know. It's really cool.
Yeah, kind of throat singing. And so there's a couple like that with this chant, you know, with them and someone else over the top of it, and it's really cool actually. But so there's that, and then other Buddhas, you know, there's the Tara mantras. There's a whole series of, there are 21 Taras, which are like goddesses or embodiments of feminine Buddhism in a way. That's probably the wrong definition, but they're basically female entities like Buddhas that you can also visualize and invoke, and they'll do things like healing and helping people and, you know, activate different aspects. So if you're interested in that, you can Google Green Tara, T-A-R-A, and there's a mantra for Green Tara. So
yeah, I'll put some links in the comments about it. Put some links in the bio for people that are interested in this.
Yeah.
So when I was talking to your teacher, he was telling me that when it comes to this kind of stuff, it's like you need to do it. Like he started off with saying 2,000 times a day or something like that. And I was like, dang, that's a lot. Like how many times do you have to go around your mala beads to get that?
Right.
You know? I was sitting there using my calculator going, oh my God, that's a lot. He said that it's kind of like filling up a piggy bank. You know, you're trying to build that karma back up by doing good deeds or by saying nice things to people and helping out. But also, you know, for yourself as well. Like, you know, that internal peace that you have to kind of come to a resolution with. There's something to be said about people that practice this kind of stuff. They live longer, they're happier, they're healthier. And if you notice, the people that are the most unhealthy people have a tendency of getting sick more frequently or develop illnesses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and even just doing the practices, as I have been recently, it transforms your mind and you set the day. You know, in the morning, I do my practices, which consist of things that this teacher has given me specifically, including mantras and visualizations. And once I've done it, it's like, wow, I really feel ready. I can cope with anything, you know. So I go out and do my day, and, you know, because I'm doing Medicine Buddha mantra as well, it helps me with my work in the healthcare field. So it's like, wow, this stuff really works. You know, I don't think there are many systems. In fact, I think Buddhism's not really a religion as such. I mean, there's a religious aspect, but I think it's more of a philosophy. And if you put that into practice, you can really feel and see and notice changes. Doing it this time around has really surprised me. I did Zen before, and Zen was very cool. But you're quite right. I mean, this is the first point of Buddhist medicine, is you can start to cure yourself so that you're then better at helping others. You know, it's like that thing on the airplane that, you know, put on your own mask first before you help others with their masks. You know, if there's a disaster on an airplane, it's the same thing. I think it's like, you know, start to cure yourself and heal yourself, and then you can help others even better. And what they say is to avert the three poisons. There are three holy acts, and one of these is arousing what they call bodhicitta, which is a sense of like, I really want to help everybody. You know, I want to give love to the world, because that's setting good karma and that's counteracting those poisons. I also want to learn to understand that my mind, my inner technology that I have, you know, and get to a point where I can meditate and shut everything off. So the thoughts may be there, but they're not affecting me. Mm-hmm. And then I can see more clearly, you know, about myself. And then also dedicating the merit from any of my actions to the benefits of the world and all sentient beings, you know, any humans, animals, trees, so that everything around us develops. And of course, if you do that, your world gets better and it's better for you as well. So it's, you know, I can see the point of all this. It's very cool.
Have you ever heard of these Buddhists in China? They actually take somebody and they put them on a table and they chant over them for like an hour. There's like a whole bunch of them. They get together, they circle around the person and they chant for like an hour, and they say it heals the person. Have you ever heard that? I actually saw a video on it one time and I was thinking, what? And this person was healed. It was like in the very end, they said, so be it. And then boom, that was it. The person was healed.
Goodness. Well, I can see how it would work. I've never heard of that, but I can imagine how it would work, because you're building up a vibration, you're attracting energies that are positive and helpful, and then, you know, applying that to the aura of that person, and then it will manifest physically. So I can completely see how that works. That's very cool. Yeah.
It's been a while since I saw this video, but from my understanding, there's a minimum of three that do this. And it's interesting. That particular thing is interesting to me, because you know how like it says in the Bible that if three or more gather together and pray in my name, then, you know, like, goodness, yeah, it's like your prayer will be answered. And basically what they're doing is they're chanting this thing, but they're basically praying, you know, they're, no matter what your religion is, when you're invoking divine energy from God, you're praying, you know, and that's basically what they're doing, is they're saying, hey, you know, I need some help here. You know, I'm pulling that energy down to save this person, you know?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's very fascinating. So can we go back over the three poisons again, what they are?
Yeah, absolutely. So the three poisons in Buddhist medicine are greed, hatred, and ignorance. So,
okay,
you know,
can we go through those and talk about each one of them?
Yeah. So greed tends to relate to desire and attachment, you know, so like if you're you have a strong sense of desire. And of course, Buddhism's all about the middle way and balance between everything. So if you have too much of greed, you're going to like have problems. Hatred is sort of things like anger and aversion and, you know, aggression, things like that. Ignorance is really not understanding your karma, being confused, bewildered about life and so on. So, you know, people do things out of ignorance. They might shout at someone because they don't know the effect that's going to have.
Yeah. So I want to kind of break these down a little bit. So let's and talk a little bit about each one. So with greed, I know you said like desire and Buddhism is like all about non-attachment, but but isn't greed one of the seven deadly sins?
Yeah, you could cross-reference it to that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so when we look at greed, I think of greed, and I could be wrong, but because I know that Buddhism sees greed as attachment, and the goal is to not be attached. When I think of greed as being, you know, a person's being greedy, you know, they're taking too much of something. Like, let's say that you're at a party and there's a bunch of food there and you're not taking into consideration that there's a whole bunch of people in line that still haven't ate yet. And you're just filling up your plate, not, you know, not really considering the fact that this food has to be spread with everybody, or being selfish and taking too much of something. So that's the kind of the way that I see greed. But I could be wrong.
No, you're correct there. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I never really thought of greed like being too attached to something, because it's really interesting. And this is a really kind of a hard one for me, because, you know, when you're thinking about like manifesting, which is a whole different subject, you are focused on what do you desire, and bringing that by focusing on it into your life by creating it in, you know, in the astral plane first, you know, and then, and taking that and bringing it down into your life. So that part right there has been a little bit challenging. I don't think I'm greedy, but I definitely think that desire is, it's a slippery slope there. What are your thoughts here? Because I don't know. I mean, to me, that's a little.
Yeah. Let's unpack it a little bit. I mean, I think greed is sort of like a headline, but I think under that comes, you know, things like what you've said, you know, people wanting to eat. I mean, that's also linked to ignorance, really, in some ways, I guess, when people just eat everything and don't think of others. But I think greed, if it comes from a place of ego, that's where you have the problems, according to Buddhism anyway. That's where things become attached, I would say. So, because a lot of this is about, you know, egotistical grasping and holding on to things that are not actually necessarily helpful. So, you know, let's look at someone who's into money and wants to, is, you know, desires money. They want more money. On the one hand, you've got people who can detach and still make money. So you've got, you know, Richard Branson and people have said, well, I just make money. I just know how to do it. I don't really care about the money. It's like I'm just really good at the process of setting up a business and making it work and so on. And that's where they're not really attached to the money, but they're successful because they're doing what their gift is. You know, that's their skill in life. Mm-hmm. Versus somebody saying, oh, I need money. And then they steal it, or they find ways to manipulate someone into it, or they desire it in a different way. So I would say this whole concept of greed is more that one, you know, the egotistical.
So you don't think that if a person is in a financial struggle, that when they are desiring money, that's not falling into the attachment of it, is it?
Yes and no. It depends really how they're thinking. You'd have to analyze what their thought process was. And, you know, again, this is part of, crosses over into one of the other poisons, which is ignorance. Mm-hmm. It may be that they're doing it because they don't understand the process of how to make money, you know. So because of that ignorance, they think the only answer to their situation is to have more money. Or they think that the only answer to their solution is a particular way of doing something, like, you know, classically people steal money. I mean, it's things like that. Mm-hmm. So that may come from ignorance as well.
What else do you think that ignorance kind of covers?
Okay, so we can go into ignorance. I mean, Buddhism is where you're kind of you don't understand things, so you take a certain action. And, you know, often you'll get, like in the situation we've just discussed, someone isn't aware that by grasping onto money as the only solution to their problems, they're missing a whole load of other things that they could do, you know. So that's why I think Buddhism has an overall approach, which is about developing compassion to the world and other animals. Because if you start helping other people and you start interacting with the world, then you often do get support in different ways. It doesn't necessarily mean financial, but it might be, you know, someone helps you out in a different way or gives you food, or, you know, you're creating good karma that then attracts good things.
Right. But how does a person that just doesn't know any better, how is that considered a poison? Like, how does that person overcome that? You know, I mean, because there's a lot of people that I would say they're just ignorant. They just don't know any better, right? So how do you, I mean, I remember being in that point in my life, and and I still feel like there's a lot more that I need to learn, right? But how do you get past that? I mean, like, what do you say to a person that doesn't know any better? I mean, I just see them as like a child mentality.
Right. And have you heard that phrase, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, which I guess it's sort of like that. Like, people do things, you know, out of a sort of misunderstanding of what they're going to do. Like, I don't know, somebody goes to a poverty stricken country and gives someone $10. And that's great for them for a while, but then they're still in poverty afterwards. It's sort of like, you know, whereas if you went there and helped them set up a business or do something, which some of these charities do, right? There's a lot of micro businesses set up for particularly women in India. I've heard of that and things like that, where people are empowered to create a life. Then that's a different approach, which is longer lasting. So there's things like that. I think it's more around educating people about how to think. And, you know, Buddhism, we talked about before, has this concept of the Eightfold Path, where people learn right action, right thinking, right judgment. So what Buddha did was to try and address these things and try and help people lift themselves out of the kind of closed mindsets that lead to problems and difficult karma.
Well, it's really interesting you say this, because in my business, I find that most people don't know how to think. When I say this, I'm talking complete truth. When I say they don't know how to think, you can ask them a question and they're so wrapped into the patterns that their mind flows that you ask them a question and they say, I don't know, immediately. And I'll go, well, think about it.
Right.
Like, the process of processing is outside of the norm. We don't do that. No. People just don't do it. They don't sit down and think about it. And I remember having a conversation with Pluto one day about something, an assignment that I was given. She gave me an assignment, and she said, it was, I'm not going to go over what it was, but there was something that had very little information about it. And she said, go meditate on it, you know, go think about it, go process it. And I was so frustrated by the idea that she wasn't going to help me out here. You know, I was just like, just tell me what this is. Tell me what it means. And I was so like lost in that space that I had no idea of this thing. But because I knew how to think and I knew how to process things, I knew how to go about understanding it, you know. And but I have personally found that most of my clients, like, they can't think outside of the box. They're like locked in the space. And one of the things that I tell them and teach them is, well, let's break this down. Let's think about this. Let's overcome this. And just through a conversation on one specific topic makes them go, whoa, I never thought about that. And it opens up this massive possibilities of potential.
Absolutely.
It's really bizarre. When I see it happening, I'm always like, ooh, a spark just happened. And one of the things that Joe Dispenza says is that when you create a new thought or you learn something new, you're actually creating 1,200 new neurotransmitters.
1200. Wow.
1200 is what he said. What it does is it makes you smarter, you know, obviously. You know, it's like, wow, your mind just expanded and suddenly, you know, you're like smarter. And I've seen that. I've literally seen that happen with my clients. You know, I've seen them become smarter just because of getting outside of those mental patterns. So I think I understand that one. I think anger is pretty easy. That's why I kind of skipped over it, because I think it's pretty easy to understand that.
Well, it's sort of encompassed with hatred as well. So it's sort of, if someone's hatred causes someone to feel anger, you know. And there's another Buddhist saying, which I think I'd mentioned before. It's one of my favorite sayings ever, if it is the Buddha, that resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Whoa, let me think about that for a second.
Hatred is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Sorry, wow. Resentment, not hatred, but it connects. Resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. So if you're resenting somebody, you're actually causing more problems for yourself, because, you know, by resentment building up all that anger and everything, it's like it's building up in your mind. Your mind synthesizes chemicals anyway all the time. And so you're creating negative chemicals that will affect your immune system negatively by ruminating and thinking of all that angry stuff. But actually, the other person may not even know that you think that way. You know, poison kills people. So it's like drinking poison, but expecting the other person to die. So it's almost like you're, by holding into resentment, you're poisoning yourself. But actually you're thinking you're going to affect the other person, but you're not.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You know, that's the part that I thought that you were saying. You are affecting the other person.
You know, they don't know that you're angry with them necessarily, because you're holding you're holding it in. But I mean, I think that saying anyway sums up the whole issue with hatred, is that it's because you're harming yourself more than the other person, essentially, by holding into hatred and anger and rejection. You think you're punishing the other person, but really the only person that's actually being affected is yourself, until you resolve it or process it or tell them or something, and it'll damage your immune system. So if we're aware of that, then we can counteract it, and we can start making positive thoughts and things that actually boost our immune system. You know, if you watch comedy, you feel good, you laugh, and that creates, you know, endorphins and dopamine and all these other things that actually help your immune system. So, you know, you can bring it down to that level as well. So I think some of these Buddhist concepts are timeless, aren't they? They will really, they're quite deep. They'll affect you on a physical level, not just mentally. And maybe that's what karma is about. You know, it's sort of, if you start to analyze your chains of thinking, you can actually start, a bit like cognitive behavior therapy, maybe you can start to improve your life.
Have you ever heard of the Hopa-Hopa prayer?
No, what's that?
You haven't heard of that? I could be saying it wrong. So basically what it is the prayer that you say is, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to say this 108 times, and you're supposed to direct it, like you visualize the person that you're having issues with. So basically what happened was, it's a Hawaiian prayer. And this doctor that was a psychiatrist was invited to go to an insane asylum, and where there was a whole bunch of murderers and killers and all this other stuff. And he went into a room next to it, didn't go in the room with the killers and all these people. And he sat there facing that direction, visualized these people, pointing this prayer, saying it over and over again. He would go in there every day and did this. And they started noticing that all of the inmates were becoming nicer and kinder. And it was, it's this very interesting thing that happened. When you were talking about like poisoning yourself, but you're also, it affects other people as well. There's this concept behind that when you think in a certain way, you're affecting, you're like putting out that energy towards them. So the way that you compensate it is by, when you do have an enemy, you literally visualize that person and you say this prayer, and suddenly your enemy stops being angry at you. It's an interesting thing. And I'm finding that as we're talking about this Buddhism, I'm seeing a lot of similarities that are in different cultures that are kind of mimicking a lot of the same things, not exactly, but in a lot of similar ways. That was really kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's slightly different because it's about when you're holding things in, and maybe that does send out thought vibes actually that maybe affect somebody. But there's a really cool Buddhist meditation, which is something I learned a long time ago. I don't know if you've come across this, but it starts out basically with, you're sitting in a meditation, getting yourself into a sort of calm state and relaxed state, and then generating love in your heart, like thinking of, people you love, things you love, animals you love, and that kind of, that feeling you get, a warm feeling of niceness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you think of someone you really like, and you visualize yourself sending that love in the form of, like, I don't know, rose pink light or something from your heart to that person. And then you just let it go. You let it go to them and say, I wish you well, and I love you, and that sort of thing. Then you visualize somebody that you don't really know that well, maybe a colleague or someone you met in the street, and do the same thing. Generate that feeling in your heart first, send it to them, and then just let it go. Okay, go in peace. May your life be happy, and so on. And then the third one is you think of someone you really don't like, or you might have had an argument with, or you've got that resentment, but you do the same thing. You generate that feeling by thinking about puppies or whatever it does that kind of makes you have that feeling. And then you send it out from your heart to the one you hate, but without any particular, they're not going to know. You just send it to them without any attachment and just say, okay, hope your life gets better. And you don't, no judgment or nothing, just like send it and then forget about it and then come back to yourself and then meditate and, think about love or compassion or something.
That's really interesting.
Isn't that difficult? But what it does is it makes you realize you have control over your love and your compassion. You can decide who you give it to or not. It's not down to someone else's behavior, what you do with your own feelings,
Yeah, it's very interesting, but thoughts are energy. So those people are picking up on that regardless. So when you do something like that, you're literally you're putting that positive energy and you're helping that person heal. I did something very similar to this when I was married to my ex-husband. He was very angry, for a while. And I used this technique that you're talking about. And I projected this energy onto him, with love and compassion and stuff. And it was almost like a miracle happened. Suddenly he was being nice, and I was like, I know. I just put a kind spell on you, dude.
Yeah. Well, you're probably creating good karma for yourself and him, in the future. So that's pretty cool.
But there is something to be said about that, though, because thoughts are energy. Every single thought you have is an electrical current that runs in your brain. So every single thought is energy, and energy moves. So, and when you project something onto somebody, they can be impacted by that. And here's a perfect example. Have you ever been in a situation where you're just like sitting back, chilling, and somebody comes at you with anger, just to surprise you? And you can feel it hit your body, physically hit your body. You feel it feels almost like this rush of energy, rushes up, your ears turn red, your heart starts beating, and you start, all of a sudden this adrenaline starts pumping. Why? Because they just sent this energy to you. So if you think about it, if you actually do the opposite, you can push that love energy upon somebody, and you can affect your enemies to be kind to you. You know what I'm saying? I love this exercise, this Buddhist exercise. That's my favorite one.
But I think it's kind of quite advanced thinking, because people wouldn't, that's not the first thing anyone would do. The first thing is to react, and the human level, mundane level thing would be to fight back or something and follow your fight or flight mechanism, that triggers you to run or to fight. But actually, by doing that, as you say, it can affect things on a different level and probably have interesting changes for them in the future as well as yourself. So isn't that what, I mean, that's what Jesus said in the Bible as well, isn't it? Love your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that's about what you just said.
Yeah. And you know what? And if you think about the process, if you were just to think about this just for a second, if I was just to come at you and say, send love to your enemy, right off the bat, you're going to have this angst feeling going, I can't. I don't want to do that. They don't deserve it. You know, but when you start and you channel that energy and you feel it, like what you're talking about, thinking about puppies or somebody you love, and you hold on to that. And then you just sort of like take that feeling and move it to somebody you don't know too well. Okay. And then you take it and you're still holding on to it. And that you're sort of like, you're easing yourself into that super cold water, you know, like when you're jumping in the water and it's like, you know, when you go to the pool and you're like, come on, get in, and you have to like ease in because it's so cold. But once you actually submerge your body, your body gets accustomed to it. So it's sort of like that. You're like easing your mind into the idea.
Well, right. Exactly. It starts you, and this plus meditation helps you to learn that actually you're the one in control. The other person isn't really in control of your life. They might do things that trigger you, but actually it's up to you how you deal with the trigger. And yes, there may be things that they do that, you know, need a legal solution or they're not justified and stuff, but you can separate yourself to an extent and sort of choose how you react to that and remain calm or react, or, you know, but the choice lies with you. You're the captain of your ship in some ways. And, you know, some of that requires building up inner strength and resilience, I guess, because it's not easy when someone's screaming at you or whatever. But ultimately, you know, there's a saying that a master should be able to walk through a storm, through a busy shopping center or a beautiful forest, all with the same mind. And eventually with these practices, I think you can get to that state.
You can.
So,
You can. When I studied under the Taoist monk, one of the things that he told me, and I'm going to use a less profane example because he did say it kind of curtly. So he said, one day somebody is going to make beautiful love to you and you're going to feel the most peace you've ever felt in your life. Mm-hmm. And he said, and then one day somebody's going to give it to you in the booty, and you're gonna feel the most peace you've ever felt in your life. But he used some colorful metaphors instead.
Right.
But the point, he was using this as a way of explaining that it's not about sex. It was about feeling that intense love that gives you peace, and feeling like you're being betrayed or hurt and feeling peace.
Yeah, you have control over the peace, right?
Mm-hmm. And Pluto and I actually did a podcast about this like early on. We were talking about you know, not being accepted or feeling like people think you're too much or you're something's wrong with you, but it's really their issue. And the sage or the person that has been the practiced Buddhist or Taoist or Kabbalist or whatever, that person that has spent years practicing is able to identify that this isn't about them, and they're able to stay in peace because they understand that this person's working through something and projecting it upon you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a hard space to be in, but I think that if we can start with these practices like you've given us today, utilize some of these mantras, practice the like I said, the example of the thing that you gave us, the exercise. These are ways that we can start building up that understanding within ourselves, and we're able to be in the presence of somebody that's feels uncomfortable and not feel affected by that.
Well, right. And I think that most people don't do things if they realize, once they actually realize this is not a good thing to do, they won't do it. They just simply won't do it. But until they realize, people do all sorts of crazy things, don't they? You know, it's...
Well, that falls into the subject of ignorance, right?
Yeah.
Of exactly. Not realizing that you're hurting somebody with your words.
Yeah.
That you're being selfish in this moment and thinking about your feelings instead of thinking about how you're hurting somebody with your words.
Right, right. And, you know, the Buddhist answer to that is to develop compassion in your heart. You know, this concept of bodhicitta, which is active compassion. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not just thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to like people for the sake of it. It's actually developing in your heart a feeling that whenever you are around other people or all sentient beings, as they say, you know, anything alive, that you have that feeling automatically of kindness towards them and love and compassion. So it's not a contrived or fake thing. It's actually something you begin to generate and feel. And they say you can cultivate that, you know? So
I have found personally that when I focus on a person, that is a person you would think you wouldn't like because of their actions. If I put my energy into them and I focus on them, I can actually feel the reasons why and feel that compassion. But yeah. if I separate myself and I sit within myself and I just look at the actions from a mundane perspective, I can feel agitated or even judgmental about their actions. And I think that you're right. It's about how did I get to that point? Well, it's because of the cultivation of feeling compassion and sitting in that space long enough to where it becomes part of your being, you know?
Yeah. And daily practice helps you do that and helps you understand the reason for that. It's not just, you're not just doing it just because you're guilty or someone's told you better be a better person. You're doing it because there's a real understanding of why that works and how it functions and how it can actually affect the world in a better way. And it's logical, isn't it? You improve the world, it'll be better for you, you know?
Well, and that's the whole goal here is to improve the world, is for us to have some kind of impact on all of us as a society. And I think that sometimes we focus too much on self and less on what our particular actions are doing to other people. And it trickles down like a domino effect.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So yeah. It can domino effect in a positive way, or it can domino effect in a negative way. It's somebody said something to me one day that really made a lot of sense to me. And I helped somebody overcome some stuff and they became a better person because of it. Mm. And then that person helped somebody else and they became a better person because of it. Mm. And there was this trickle down effect. And somebody said something to me one day and they said, you had no idea what you're doing because it's affecting more people than just one.
Mm.
It was really interesting to Beautiful. Kind of look at it from that angle of, you know, what can one person do? One person can do a lot. They can do a lot of harm or they can do a lot of good, you know?
And we don't realize that, do we? You know, a lot of people are thinking, oh, I'm just this little person in the world and I can't really have an effect. It's okay. I'll do what I want. But actually, your actions can have a big effect. Yeah. And on yourself, you know, and according to Buddhism, your future lives as well, you know. So now I'm thinking, my goodness, what was all this negative karma I created in my past lives? And I now want to process it and try and clean it all out because it's like, I don't want that now. You know, I want to actually have a better way forward and, you know, improve my future lives. So I can see the benefit of that. And, you know, these practices that if you do decide to study Buddhism and take an interest in that path, it can help you to cleanse your past karma and all of these things. So.
Yeah. And like you said, it's not necessarily religion. It's something that can be added onto any religion. So whatever religion you are, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, you know, tradition that you choose, you know, to follow, you can exercise these philosophies, apply them to your life and still keep your own personal tradition in place without it interfering. It's a way of being like a very Zen Christian or a very Zen Jewish person or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, my teacher says that really to be a true Buddhist, you don't say you're a Buddhist, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's a yogi, so he's like a lama, but he basically, you know, like a Buddhist teacher, but he doesn't wear all the robes and doesn't go into a monastery, but he lives in the street. So there's a branch of Tibetan Buddhism that are the yogis, you know, that, and that's their path, is to use these teachings to benefit everybody. And in the West, of course, we don't really understand a lot of the terminology. So, you know, one of his goals, and he's got a great website.
Now, he calls himself a yogi. When I think of yogis, I think of yoga. Is there a connection there?
A vague connection, because I think most in the past, the term has come from the Indian esoteric practitioners who are called yogis. And, you know, the yoga that we think about tends to be the body and, doesn't it, the stretching and all of those mm-hmm. postures. But that's only one very small percentage of it. Like, yoga is a whole philosophy. So I think the terms come from that. And of course, you know, Buddhism comes from a guy who went from India, who was a master yogi, basically, over to Tibet. And he helped them to establish Buddhism in Tibet. So I think the terminology has just gone across, and it just refers now to somebody who is an ascetic or somebody who practices Buddhism. In fact, the Tibetan word for it is napka. It's like NGAPKA, napka. So you'll see on the website, this particular teacher we're talking about has napka Konchok, who is, you know, Konchok's his Buddhist name, and napka, it means yogi. So he has that title because he's reached a point, a bit like any Buddhist teacher or monk or lama. However, he's not in a monastery. He's chosen to live in the world and you know, help people relieve their suffering. And so his big thing is actually not to worry about the label. It's about actually the, you know, what you're doing to help people and what Buddhist philosophies and teachings can give you for that. So he even calls himself, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm a student of Buddhism.
But comes back to building up that bank of karma.
Yeah.
That's good. And so the more good karma that you put out, the more good karma that comes back to you. So like all this work I do in this life, in my next one, I'm just going to be this billionaire sitting on a beach, chilling out, relaxing.
Maybe. But then is that going to really help you? I don't know. Because Buddha.
I don't know. I'm just joking. I was thinking, I mean, I know that that's what people think of as karma. They think of karma as like bad luck. And so good luck would be financial gain, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Buddha himself was born a prince. You know, he had that situation. Yeah. So presumably he created enough karma to get to that point. But then he chose to renounce it. Mm. He said, this isn't enough, you know?
Yeah.
I need to find something inside, something else, you know?
So if it doesn't mean financial, what does good karma coming back to you mean?
There's a really good Buddhist text that's on this teacher's website, actually, and it's called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons. That's the title of the text in Tibetan Buddhism. But it goes through, and if you look at his article, he quotes a lot of it. So it goes through things like a few different situations that karma can cause. So he'll say, you know, for example, when we are born in oppressive and wretched conditions, this is the wheel of sharp weapons returning full circle upon us from wrongs we have done in the past. Till now, we've always had a negative outlook. We've criticized others, seeing only their flaws. Hereafter, let's cultivate positive feelings and view our surroundings as pure and stainless. So, you know, that's an example of karma in that, you know, if you've gone around, as it says, having a negative outlook and criticizing people, you will then be born in a difficult and oppressive condition. That's your karma coming back at you, the wheel of sharp weapons turning and bringing it back onto you. So, and he goes through various different things like that. Well, actually, he's quoting directly from the book. But it's quite interesting, you know, this Tibetan Buddhism analyzes karma and how it works and all of these different things, which I think is something we could really use in this world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If we start to think about our actions and the consequences, we probably wouldn't do such negative things sometimes, you know.
So what does good karma look like?
So I guess good karma would be that you feel at peace and you feel you're born into a situation where you have money and space and time to be able to devote to your teachings and your practice.
Mm.
I would guess. I mean, one of the things they talk about also in Buddhism is being grateful we're able to actually have space in our lives to do things like talk about Buddhism on a podcast, or where you're able to study esoteric practices, or, you know, or meditate. Many people aren't born in that situation. Some people are born, you know, if you're a woman born in Afghanistan at the moment, what's, you know, you don't have any space to do anything. If you're grateful for your human life and you use it positively, you'll continue to create more positive karma. And your karma probably brought you to a position where you could have space and you could have the enough luxury to be able to do good things, until eventually you have enough practice and understanding to be able to be free of this constant cycle of rebirth, birth and rebirth and death.
What about the people that say to you, I don't really care about my past life or my future life. All I care about is this life right now. Can you build up enough karma in this lifetime to be able to get a positive effect in this lifetime?
I believe so. I mean, okay. I think it works on multiple levels. You know, it might not be your past or future lives. It might be now, you know, and you get instances of good karma. You know, this is probably a very basic example, but like you help somebody in the street who's has no food and you buy them a burger or something, you know, and then later on someone just gives you some food. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen that happen. It's happened in my life quite a few times. And so I think there are instant things. I mean, I can't see enough the cause and effect of that, but I think there are a lot of instances where that does happen.
That's very interesting.
I suppose the other thing, there's a lot more to Buddhist medicine and healing. And so there's a lot more about that to say about the Buddhist healing system and medicine system.
I actually think that we could do a whole podcast just on what you just said. I think that when you're kind of going into that a little bit more specific, I think we could really like really break it down and get into it a little bit deeper. Definitely think that this has been a really great conversation, and we're going to put some links and some information in the description if any of you guys are interested in kind of learning some of this stuff. I hope that you guys got something out of this and use some of these practices that we've given you. Try the exercise that Brother Mercurio gave you. I wish all the love upon everyone in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Wishing everybody all the best. And thank you for listening. And please like and subscribe if you feel that you'd like to continue to hear our podcast. And yeah, thanks, Michelle. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, it's been great. We'll see you in the next podcast.
Bye for now.